And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
Well, Billy Joel might be in a New York state of mind with his summer concert out at Shea Stadium, the last play at Shea, but we're always in a New York state of mind here on the John Gambling Show, especially on a Friday because we sit down with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Hello there, Mr. Mayor.
John, if we could have a week like this, a ticker tape parade for a winning New York sports team every week, think how much better that would make our show.
Absolutely. Well, I got to tell you, it would certainly keep the sanitation and the cops busy because it was some party down there on Tuesday. It looked like you were having some fun there in the back of that truck.
Look, I grew up in a world where I didn't know famous people, and I certainly would never, inconceivable that I would be in a ticker tape parade and, standing next to Manning and Strahan. It was hard to tell who the football players were, but actually, they were holding their two trophies and they were holding them up. And after a while, even they get tired, so they kept giving them to me, saying, "Here, you carry them." And they were heavy, but it was a lot of fun. And
yeah, I saw you with the championship cup, but I didn't. Did you hold the Super Bowl trophy?
I held both of them at different times in the float. The parade, virtually everybody behaved, and the sanitation department did their usual job. The next day, you almost couldn't tell that there had been a parade. There was still a little bit of paper that had stuck to some of the buildings that had to be cleaned off. But, they did a great job. And, it's a little bit disruptive for traffic for a day, but it does an enormous amount for the city. I was lucky enough to be at the Super Bowl, and I think it's fair to say a majority of that crowd was rooting for New York because New York was the underdog. And I think that's good for the city that people, think of us as, a little bit. Some people think we're arrogant. I don't think we are. And I think certainly 9/11, we understood just we're part of this country and the country came to our aid. And now you have a chance to go out there and to come from behind. It's the great American story. It's a dream thing for promoting New York, and it's a dream situation for the team. You got to look at these guys who are out there playing their hearts out. And I actually thought that the Giants game, when they played the Patriots about 4 or 5 weeks earlier, where they didn't have to win, it wouldn't have changed their playoff position at all. And a lot of people said, oh, they'll just go through the motions. Why run the risk of getting hurt or anything? And they played their hearts out, and they could have won that game. And I think that had a lot to do with their win because it gave them the confidence that on any given Sunday, they can be the best team in the NFL. And this past Sunday, they were. And
I have to ask you, when you were out there, I was wondering about this on Sunday because I knew you were out there. Were you with any Patriots rooters?
No, I went to visit the new commissioner of the NFL, Paul Tagliabue, is somebody I've known for a long time. But I went to see Commissioner Goodale in his box, and I could see out of the corner of my eye Mr. Kraft, who I don't think I've ever met, but somebody who really cared, obviously, about his team. He was he worked as hard as he could. And you got to say something nice about the Patriots. I mean, they did win every single game except that, and they are a phenomenal team, and I'm just
and
glad
nobody that, will remember that, unfortunately.
Well, they will, I think. But, this was, I think, the greatest Giant game I ever saw. And the other one that comes to mind, and I was talking to Michael Strahan on the field when I went down after the Super Bowl game was over. And I said, the game that I remember seeing on television was the 1958 game against the Baltimore Colts when Alan Ameche went over for the touchdown in Yankee Stadium. And it was, if you had to pick a game, the classic football game for history, that was, in my mind, the game. And I said, I thought this game certainly was equal to that. And he said to me something, that's the nicest thing anybody'd ever said. you got to remember, these guys, they play their hearts out. And we think of them as, so much different than us. But they have the same feelings and that we all have. And I was in college a Baltimore Colts fan. I went to school in Baltimore. And
I was going to say, you were riding the clock back a ways on that.
Well, the Giants. Giants, when the Giants and the Colts played, I had not gone to Baltimore, and maybe I became a Colts fan afterwards because of the, I don't know. You know, it's long lost in history. But Y.A. Tittle and Alan Ameche, those were my football heroes at the time when people in New York were looking at Sam Huff and people like that. But it was wonderful for the city, wonderful for the players. The people in Glenville, Arizona, which is a suburb of Houston, could not have been nicer. The weather was fine. The number of people that were partying when we got there Saturday night, you know, I think a lot of them stayed up all night long partying. And instead of a lot of people were there who didn't have tickets, they just went to the bars and watched the game. But everybody certainly got their money's worth.
No question about that. Mr. Mayor, we're going to get down to some talk about our city here in just a moment. Why don't I take a break here? It's an appropriate point. We'll come right back at 77 WABC. We continue here on a Friday John Gambling Show. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is with us. Speaking of Super Bowl and Super Tuesday and the parade, your reaction to what happened on Super Tuesday in the national elections?
Well, I think if you take a look back 6 months ago, 3 months ago, people would have said the Democrat competition is fundamentally over and the Republican competition will go on probably until the convention. And here we are 4 days after Super Tuesday, 3 days after Super Tuesday, with the Republicans seemingly settled. I suppose Huckabee still has a chance, but conventional wisdom at this point is McCain has the Republican side locked up, and you have a real Donnybrook on the Democratic side, which could go until the convention. So it just goes to show you what all the pundits, talking heads know, me included.
Well, I'll tell you, you have made no secret of the fact that you want to be a part of the commentary of the presidential and the national election. Do you think that the things that you have been talking about have had any effect?
Well, John, things I care about this country and this city and things like public education. I don't hear anybody really talking about how you're going to make sure public education throughout this country provides what our children need to live in a global, technological, competitive world, which we're in and it's going to be even more so. Crime is down in New York City. That's good, but it's going up in the rest of the country. We have guns in the hands of criminals. Part of the crime problem is a failed education system, but I don't hear anybody talking about that. We have health care that we can't afford and isn't giving us good value for the dollar. We spend $2,000 or $3,000 less, I think, than they do in Western Europe, and their life expectancy is a few years more. And we should be asking why, what are we getting for our money, and how can we do a better job? And all the projections say that the cost of health care is going to bankrupt our country. We have deficits that keep growing. We're leaving our kids an enormous bill and taking the goodies now. There's some economists that say our balance sheet looks like that of a third world country or is getting there. And we have no friends or very few friends around the world in a time when global trade is going to create the jobs we need in our country. Fight of terrorism is something we can't do alone. Medicine and science is a worldwide effort, and you have to participate all over the world or you just can't get the benefits of it. And people aren't yet, I hope they will, but aren't yet really addressing those issues. We have, protectionism of jobs when we should be promoting jobs. We have a stimulus package which may help a little bit but doesn't address the root causes of why the economy is slowing down. And we're going to have some real problems here. People are losing their homes. And, we should talk about how you do something about this. And candidates, I think, have to have real concrete plans and be willing to say it and show how they're going to get everybody together. Having a great plan and not being able to pull Congress together and get behind it is just going to leave us pointing fingers again. So, yeah, I'm trying to stay involved and speak out. I think we all have an obligation to do it, and the mayor of the city has a bully pulpit to do so, and I think has an obligation to do so. Not to pick sides. I've said I will stay out of the presidential, the primary, certainly, and also the general election, because this city has to get help from Washington regardless of who wins the presidential election in November, and so I will stay neutral. I don't have a right to jeopardize the help the city can get from my own personal political views. So that's what I'm going to do. But speaking out, yeah.
Has the landscape, the political landscape, the way it is as of today, changed your view about your participation other than what you just explained?
No, personally, no. But I think John McCain now has the opportunity, because he no longer has to battle to get the nomination. He looks like he's the he's going to have that. So now he can focus on what he should what he thinks he would do, and he has to reach out to people across the spectrum, not just the right, but the centrists in this country, and explain what he would do. And I think that Clinton and Obama have, while they're still engaged in a very contentious and spirited, is a nice way to phrase it, primary battle, if they are going to get the confidence of the voters, they've got to say what they really mean, and there's less distraction in the Democratic race than there used to be, because it's down to two candidates. McCain doesn't have to worry about it at all. He can. There's no distraction. So hopefully
Mr. Mayor,
they will.
Let me ask you this. The president this week put forward a budget, a new budget, totaling more than north of $3.1 trillion.
That's a lot of zeros.
I mean, that's a whole lot of zeros. And I think that that's one of our problems, is that there's too much money. And I believe that that size budget is almost unmanageable.
John, the problem with keep in mind, what Congress can do fundamentally, or legislators at all level, they vote money. And it's the executive branch that really runs the specific agencies at a federal, state, or city level. And so you can understand why Congress is always voting more money, and particularly in an election year, conventional wisdom is there's no benefit to voting less money. But too much money, too easy to get, or throwing money at all problems, keeps you from focusing on which programs work and which programs don't. And it is worse than having programs that don't work is worse than just wasting your money. They really get in the ways of things that do work. And so they not only they don't have just a neutral impact, they have a negative impact. And we have a history at every level of government. You can blame it on all me and everybody else. We find it difficult to say, no, we're not going to throw more money at the problem. And in fact, what we tend to do in government is move monies from programs that work to programs that don't work, because nobody stands up and screams for more in programs that work. They scream very loudly in programs that don't work, and so the legislators move the monies over there. Or in the case of the federal government, they just do everything. States have some fiscal responsibility, and certainly New York City, we have an enormous fiscal responsibility because we have to have a balanced budget at the end of the year by law. So, you know, when it comes time to balancing the budget, you can look at the city's budget, and we're going to put more money in programs A, C, and F. And that means that, B and D and E are going to lose. And then everybody yells and screams. But the fact of the matter is, you can move monies around.
Is this just the way of the political world, that there's no way out of this, that it just continues to grow and grow?
I have confidence that the public is smarter than people give them credit for, and there is a ways out of it. And I think, in all fairness, you've got to give our city council some credit for acting responsibly. We have had a balanced budget each year. They were party to it. We've brought $5 or $6 billion deficits into a surplus, although we're clearly going to have a big problem going forward. And if we don't get the help we need from Albany and the municipal unions, then we're going to really have a particular problem. But the city council in New York City has acted very responsibly. The speaker deserves, Christine Quinn deserves a lot of credit. Billy Thompson has been very helpful as a controller in terms of pointing out places where we can have savings. And I think the reason that we've gone from big deficits to surpluses is partly a boon of the economy, but also partly because of responsible governance for the citywide officers and for the city council members.
I also read, too, that federal budget has some cuts in health care that could affect city hospitals.
Well, every year the president, let me rephrase that and make it more broad. There is always executive branches try to economize on things they know are going to be in there anyways. And I think that we have a history of saying we're going to cut funds for teaching hospitals, and then invariably they do get restored. I happen to think they're good investments, and we shouldn't have cut them to begin with, but a little bit of that is a political game. So, you know, it's like the governor's budget or the mayor's budget. The president proposes a budget, and then you work with the legislative branch. Elliot Spitzer is going to have to work with the Senate and the Assembly, and the mayor, Mayor Bloomberg, is going to have to work with the city council.
All right, here we are on the half hour. We're going to take care of a little business right now. Mr. Mayor, relax, take a break. We will come right back in just a second at 77 WABC. It's Mayor Michael Bloomberg Day here on the John Gambling Show, and as you know, that means you get to ask the questions at the end of the program, 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-WABC. If you want to get online, do it. Mr. Mayor, you and I have talked about OTB, the problems there with just going, you know, going out of business because the dollars and cents aren't working out. The story today that surprises me somewhat, the state is going to bail out the New York Racing Association to the tune of $105 million.
Well,
is that good business in your view?
You know, look, the racing industry is a big industry in New York. I don't know how many people it employs and how much money it brings to the state. But outside of particularly upstate, this is a big industry, and they want to make sure that they can stay in business, and they want some government subsidies. And whether the government should be subsidizing them or not, I'll leave that to the state government. What we can't leave to the state government is New York City has been forced, because of New York State's policies, to subsidize a bookie operation. And we're just not going to do that. And the agreement, if I understand it, is they're going to give NYRA, who has been through bankruptcy and has had all sorts of problems, I don't know if they're the right ones. Other people seem to say they could run it better and want the opportunity to compete, and they don't seem to get it. But that's the state's business. If the state, however, is going to do something that, and we're told, their agreement is they would not do anything about the OTB's problems, but they would address it in May of 2009. That's just not acceptable. We will, the board of OTB will call a meeting later in February, and we will vote to close it down, and we will close it before the end of June, because we're just not going to put more money into this. This is craziness. This is a bookie operation that actually is reasonably well run, but the state takes over 100% of the profits.
You can't run a business like that for very long.
You cannot. And what we've got to do is take money that we want to use to pay our cops and firefighters and teachers and all the other people that work in this city that comes out of the city taxpayers' pockets and subsidize a bookie operation. I don't think so. And I don't see any reason why they can't do something that includes us and that we have a say in it. And we're just, going to do everything we can to stop.
Will that jeopardize, do you think, as you understand the deal, will that jeopardize the $105 million
subsidy to NYRA? I have absolutely no idea. It's up to the state. I don't want to get in the way of what they decide to do. They've got a strapped budget. If they have the monies to do it or feel that this is the high priority thing, that's what they were elected to do. But I was elected to take care of the people of the city of New York, and they aren't going to balance the budget in Albany on our backs. And this is just another one of those attempts to do that, and we're not going to take it anymore.
All right, let's talk. Yesterday, you had some pretty strong words for the real estate industry in New York City yesterday. I thought this was a little out of character for you, but you're talking about them trying to get involved with the politics of the next mayoral race?
Well, for a start, there's nobody, I don't think there's any administration that has been more pro-development than we have. And we have gotten an enormous amount of construction going in this city. We've rezoned a sixth of the city. We're record number of houses and office buildings and all of that sort of stuff. And you didn't, in order to get permits or to get contracts, you didn't have to give any money to the city. We did it strictly, or to any of the political candidates or the mayor, me. We did it strictly on the merits, and that's the way it should be. The city council deserves a lot of credit, as does Christine Quinn for leading them, to pass laws which would limit the amount of money that people that do business with the city can give to candidates. The laws go into effect. I think they actually take effect. This just took effect. And just before that, a lot of people in the real estate industry got 10 times the amount of money they will be able to give under the new law. They rushed that money to the candidates. Now, I happen to think they're wrong to do it, even if it is legal, and the candidates are wrong to take it, even if it's legal.
I was going to ask you about the responsibility of the candidates.
Both sides. I mean, come on. We passed a law. Everybody knows what the law is. It's a technicality that doesn't go into effect until then, and so everybody says, well, wink, wink, I can do it. And then, you know, they start to split it up. Well, it didn't come from the company. It comes from each member of a family or each employee of the company. You know, the bottom line is you shouldn't have to buy influence with government. And that's what's wrong here. And I just, you know, I'm not opposed to development. And the people in the real estate industry, a lot of them are very close personal friends. But that doesn't get in the way of what's right. And what's right is they should have, the instant the city council passed those laws, said, well, even if they don't take effect, we are not going to participate in just getting ahead of what we know we're not going to be allowed to do. The public has spoken through its elected officials, and the spirit is there, even if the law hadn't taken place. And I just thought it was wrong.
It doesn't bode well for the future, what bothers me, that this whole thing, I mean, not just on the New York City landscape, but nationally and locally around the tri-state area. New Jersey's had this problem for years.
Well, it's clearly at all levels of government, there's always been a pay-to-play, I don't know always, but as long as I've read political history, there's been a pay-to-play culture. And, you know, I think it's because today we have computers so we can track who gives whom to what if we just make the data available. We have a very aggressive press. It's their job to take the information and get it out to the public. And it's the public's job to hold elected officials accountable and say that kind of conduct is not what we want. But there's no question. You build an aircraft carrier, you'd be shocked. Somebody's done this before. You build a big ship or something, and you look to see where the parts come from. And you know, you think ships are built by the near the water, big parts of them are done in other parts of the country. Why? Because every congressional delegation says, if I'm going to vote for that project, I want some of that business to be done in our state. And then you go and look and you find the companies that get the business in their states are the people that have given them campaign donations. And whether it's legal or not, the optics are terrible. But it's the concept that's the real problem. How do you explain to your kids that you cannot do business with a government at any level without giving donations? I mean, I'd like to think, I hope, our administration is for 6 years, and we'll do it for another 692 days, but who's counting? It's strictly on the merits. And, you know, lobbyists can plead and cajole, but their job, as far as this administration is concerned, is to bring us the facts as to what their clients can do in terms of producing giving the city a better deal for its hard-earned dollars, and that there's not going to be any influence. And that's hopefully what we've done.
All right. The state education department, I understand, is going to phase out or is threatening to phase out 13 New York City schools because of poor performance.
These are SIR schools, and we have fewer schools on the SIR list this time than there are in the rest of the state. It's really quite good news for us. Keep in mind, we have 1,400 schools. Some of the schools are schools that didn't do that poorly on the grading, and some graded schools were closing even if they weren't on the CIR list, because the grading measures it in a different way, I think a more appropriate way. Our grading system for schools doesn't measure how well the kids are doing today. They measure the improvement from last year.
What happens to the people that go to these schools if indeed they are closed or phased out?
Well, you may reopen a different school in the same building, but also you just transfer the kids to another school.
I find that there's that much extra room around.
We certainly have too big class size and not enough seats. But in the context of a small number of schools with a very big school system, that's not where the problem is. The problem is much greater than that, and this may exacerbate it a tiny bit. But, you know, class size is only one thing. Having great teachers that are well-trained and well-led, that's what really makes a classroom a productive place to give kids the education they need.
Are you a supporter of vouchers?
It's an interesting concept, and some people love it and some people hate it. What I've said from the beginning, it is politically untenable. In this city, you would never get it through. I think it would be an enormous distraction. That's one problem. So I've said no. I'm not going to go fight that battle. Now, people that love vouchers think I should, but I just think it's tilting at windmills. You'd not get it done. I think charter schools and fixing the basic public school model that we have is where you really should focus your attention. Also, there is the issue with vouchers that who would get the vouchers? There's a lot of people who are already paying for private education for their kids who would get a big portion of them. So you wouldn't really get that much money to those people who can't afford to send their kids to private schools. And the vouchers are always sort of touted as a ways to let everybody, no matter what their income level is, have the opportunity to send their kids to other than the public schools. What I want to do is focus on making the public schools better. And I was talking to somebody yesterday, you know, the UFT deserves a lot of credit. We have negotiated performance pay and tenure changes and a whole bunch of things with the teachers' union, which everybody said you couldn't do, but our teachers' union here turns out to be progressive and not only interested in making a better place for their employees and getting them better paid, but also getting them to be part of a great school system. And so we've, rather than focused money on vouchers, focused money on in the schools. We've given our teachers a 43% raise. We have 50,000 people from around the country applying for 5,000 jobs each year. Teachers are leaving in a lot less, at a lot slower rate than the system than they did before, and a lot more want to come here. Teaching is a better job, and the teachers are doing better. And I think that's where we should focus on it and keep it doing. And I like charter schools, even though they're small in number, they give competition. And I just always thought competition is great for everybody.
All right. Let's take a break here. We'll open up the phones, 1-800-848-WABC. You get to ask the questions of Mayor Michael Bloomberg, and you will get that opportunity next. All right, it's your turn on a Friday John Gambling Show to ask the questions of Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Mayor, you all set? Here we go. We're
going
to start with Glenn in Brooklyn. Glenn, what's your question for the mayor?
Yes, sir. I'm an auxiliary police sergeant for the last 13 years, and I just read in the New York Daily News the other day on page 19 that the police department will be taking away our parking plaques. We need those parking plaques when we go to the details for parades, other places where we need to use our own vehicles, and there's also other areas where we park near the precincts where we also have gotten tickets in the past when we didn't have them.
Okay. Number one, thank you for your service. The auxiliary police really do make a difference in the city. They help the world's greatest police department keep this city safe, and we all want to say thank you, and we really do appreciate what you do. In terms of the parking plaques, there are times when city employees really do need parking plaques to do their jobs. But when it comes to having a place to park when they get to their jobs, that's what the private sector has the same problem with. And it's just not fair to give one group of people a benefit that we can't give everybody. And clearly, we can't give parking plaques to everyone. So what we're trying to do is to reduce the number of plaques to be only those people people that really need them for their job, and they should only use it when they're doing their job. So if you go to a parade or something and you can't find a place to park, I understand that. When you're going to the precinct and going to work out of the precinct, that's like somebody else going to their factory or store or office, and they've got to figure out a ways to park, and they should get no less service from the city than you do.
All right, Gail in New York City, you've got the mayor's ear. Go, Gail.
Hi, Mayor Bloomberg.
Hi.
I'm an LTB employee for over 30 years. My question is, if they close, what are you going to do with the 1,500 employees?
That is a very big problem. I've talked to the union that represents you, Lillian Roberts, DC 37, and it's a very big problem what we're going to do, and the people in Albany should start paying attention. But we just cannot run something where we're subsidizing a bookie operation. And I think the state should reduce the amount of money that we have to send them to a small percentage, less than 100% of the amount of monies we make. And we'll have the 1,500 OTB employees who work so hard and do such a good job continue to do it and generate revenue for the state. So, you know, but you're 100% right. It's a real problem. And hopefully Albany will listen.
All right, let's go to Jay in Queens. You've got the mayor, Jay. Not a lot of time, so get right to the question.
Hi, Mr. Mayor.
Hi.
I'm a former New York City public school teacher. I was basically fired at the 2 days before school started, and I had my administrative appeal now 2 months ago. And basically, my principal basically falsified documents, and I had originals. And the
what's the question, Jay? What's the question?
Is there any way to get information in the DOE that beyond just sit and wait for an answer? The union just tells me to wait, and at this point, I felt like I had my due process, my fair day in court. And
well, it does sound like you have a real problem. I think the logical place is to talk to your union, because they have people who can help you and can make sure that all of the rights that you have are rights that are made available to you. But that's what they're there for, and this is a union that's got plenty of experience, so I'm sure that's the right answer.
All right, Jack in Brooklyn, you're next with Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. Go.
Yeah, so first of all, it's an honor to talk to the mayor. First of all, I'd like to say that I think, like most New Yorkers, we would support Mayor Bloomberg's run for president, because we know that all the money he takes into his campaigns are always clean, it's always his own pocket. And I think that most of us New Yorkers are sick of politicians who take money from special interest groups, and then we see they don't show up for voting those days when they have to vote against them, or they always vote pro them. And I think that I think it's a problem around the U.S., and most U.S. citizens, I think, are sick of it already.
All right. So what, Mr. Mayor, Jack thinks you should run for president.
Yeah, well, it's very flattering, Jack, but I've got a job to do, and I'm going to be in the job for the next 692 days, I think it is, but who's counting?
Well, you know what? You're getting good at that. I got to ask you about the airports. You saw the list real fast. We only have about a minute here. The airports, bottom of the list on time. It's got to hurt the city.
LaGuardia is a particular problem. The way the runways are laid out, when you have strong winds, they have to go from two runways to one runway, and that cuts the amount of traffic that they can serve by half or more. JFK is a problem. It's not the runway design. I'm not quite sure why, but they seem to always have problems in getting backed up. Newark, a lot of people want to come here, and we're not going to build another airport, so we have to find a ways to get more planes in and out, not to cut the planes that come here.
All right, sort of like the mass transit congestion pricing thing, right? The same kind of deal.
John, see you next week.
All right, Mr. Mayor, have a good one. Be well. We will indeed see you next week.